We're giving away two audio DVDs of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. That's almost 8 hours of teaching. Here's how you can win. Find the Issues Etc. podcast at the iTunes store. Click Ratings and Reviews and write a review. Then send the text of your review to contest@issuesetc.org. The two listeners with the best reviews will receive the audio DVD of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. We'll announce the winners on Labor Day.
They think sometime in the next 5 or 10 years, gay marriage is going to happen. So if that's true, why did they have to destroy the initiative process in order to have gay marriage happen a few years sooner?
We step into the church in our own lifetimes, and the church goes on and on and on, and will go on through eternity. It's not ours to tamper with and change.
That's where our certainty is. It's in the death of Jesus. And I know that God loves me because I know that Jesus died for me.
Western New York State Independent Baptist pastors love Issues, etc.
I think we are sometimes caught flat-footed. We don't know how to respond. It's not like we're trying to undermine the enterprise of science, but just think of it this way. If you have moral, ethical concerns about issues like, say, abortion or in vitro fertilization or other life issues, and you raise those moral and ethical concerns, you will often hear from those on the other side of the issue that it has nothing to do with ethics. It has everything to do with you're a Luddite, you're anti-science. How in the world do you respond? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Friday afternoon. It's the 9th of August. Wesley Smith joins us for the first few minutes of the program. We'll talk a little bit about playing the anti-science card and, well, how do you counter it? Robert Benny will join us after that. This year is the 25th anniversary of the formation of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. It's hard to believe that it's only been 25 years, but much has happened. A lot of promise at the beginning, and then, well, I guess if you look at the numbers, a lot of disappointment from that point on, really, if you look at the decline of that church body over the years. I think that the National Council of Churches said it's the fastest declining segment of mainline American Protestantism. In the second hour of the program, we're going to go into part five of our Christianity 101 series today, the church and what the church is, how does that affect how the church orders itself, and various things usually called ecclesiastical usages. We'll figure out what that is with Pastor Stephen Parks in hour two of Issues, etc. You can join us for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Wesley Smith is a regular guest, an attorney and bioethicist. He's senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America, and a columnist for First Things and National Review Online. Wesley, welcome back.
Thanks. How are you?
I'm doing well, but I understand that your place at National Review Online is being questioned here, because I understand, I did not know this about you as often as we have spoken, that you are anti-science.
Not only that, I hate biology. I hate biology, and I think biology is the work of Lucifer.
Really?
Yes.
I've never heard you say
that. That's what I was accused of.
I was wondering, because I've never heard you say that in all the times we've talked.
Well, you know, what happened was I wrote a piece on my Human Exceptionalism blog at National Review, basically saying I don't think it's a good idea for us to have three-parent embryos made with the IVF process. And a three-parent embryo would have two biological mothers and one biological father. That is, a woman's egg would be genetically modified so it contained the substances of two women, and then normal fertilization. And I said there are ethical problems here, and then there are safety issues here. And it wasn't anything that I thought would be the cause of any kind of major reaction. It was pretty actually mainstream concerns. Well, this fellow named Campbell at Science 2.0 suddenly did this diatribe, is the only way to describe it, attacking me for those views, attacking me for being with the Discovery Institute, and urging that National Review let me go and not ever publish anybody from the Discovery Institute again to prove they're rational, because all of us are anti-science. And I responded in kind, you know, not in kind, but I responded saying this is, you know, this this is not right. This is incorrect about my views. And then I started thinking about this anti-science canard, you know, where if you stand against somebody, as you pointed out, on ethical concerns, for example, embryonic stem cell research, that's not a science debate, that's an ethics debate. I've said that many, many times on this show. And the question is it proper to use a human embryo as if it were a corn crop? And, you know, people have different views on that, but it's a legitimate ethical debate. Yet, people like me are often called anti-science because I want to have some regulations over that form of research. And then I wrote this piece in First Things, which is in today's First Things on the Square, about the anti-science canard, and I point out, well, the National Institutes of Health has just said we are not going to fund any research, new research, with chimpanzees, even though using chimpanzees because of their genetic similarity to humans has led to very important breakthroughs, for example, the hepatitis vaccine, could lead to further breakthroughs, because chimps get HIV and don't get sick, but that wasn't called anti-science. Even though some of the people who said proponents of regulating embryonic stem cell research were anti-science, what's the difference? It's whether your morality comports with a particular policy. The mainstream view about the chimps supports that policy, even though it's a moral, ethical decision. They don't call that anti-science. So it depends on who's moral ox is being gored, whether something is anti-science. If they agree with your moral view, you're not anti-science. If they disagree with your moral view, you're anti-science. Well, that becomes clear then that the term anti-science is a way of shutting up debate. There's another example of how the anti-science cudgel, if you will, is used. If you think that global warming might not be a potential catastrophe, you're anti-science because you stand against the scientific consensus. Even scientists who are producing scientific studies with that heterodox view are called anti-science, even though they're engaging in science. My colleagues at the Discovery Institute who do the intelligent design work, I'm not involved in that project, but they're often called anti-science, and I point out in this First Things article, wait a minute, that's not anti-science. They have expressed a heterodox hypothesis. That is that purpose is actually a better explanation of life than random, purposeless natural selection. They may be wrong about that. But they're doing experiment, they're analyzing the evidence. That's what science is. And there have often been examples in history of very heterodox views that turned out to actually be correct. And so I point out that the anti-science thing is to shut people up who you disagree with so you don't have to actually win an intellectual debate. You can just shame them into science, and I mean to silence, and convince the powers that be to ignore what they say because they're not respectable because they're anti-science, which means they're anti-modernity.
Well, in your case, I think not only was the anti-science card played, but very subtly, perhaps deftly pulled out of one sleeve, I think with the Lucifer reference with regard to you, because I don't think you've ever referenced Lucifer with regard to these things.
I never have.
But I think that was a little bit of a religionist card being played against you.
Of course, because, and here's the other gig that they do. If you're religious, if you have faith, but you're making rational arguments, right? They say you're making religious arguments. Then you point out, wait a minute, these are rational debates. These are rational arguments. They're secular arguments. Yeah, you don't really mean the secular arguments. That's just a cover for your religious views. So if you have any religious faith, then you're not even really permitted to debate in the public square, even on rationalist terms, because it's not what you really mean. What you really mean is Lucifer.
What is a three-parent IVF embryo, and what is your concern?
Well, a three-parent IVF embryo, and it's initially, they're about to be done in the UK, to try to make it so that women with mitochondrial disease, which is passed on through the female DNA or through the egg, can have biologically related children without passing on the disease. And what they would do is they would take the woman with the mitochondrial problem, they would take one of her eggs and take out the nucleus, which contains the DNA, which is or the expressing genes, which would be healthy. They then take another woman's egg who does not have mitochondrial disease, take out the nucleus out of that egg, and put the first nucleus where that was. You then fertilize it with sperm, and you end up with if it works, you end up with a child who has two mothers and one father in terms of biology. Now, one of the things I warned about is that there's a real safety concern, because that is very similar to how cloning is done. Somatic cell nuclear transfer, you take the nucleus out of an egg, as in this situation. The difference is, rather than fertilizing the altered egg, you take a cell from, let's say, or the nucleus from a skin cell and put it in the egg, and then you stimulate it, and asexually you create mammal life. That's how Dolly the sheep came into being, through cloning. Well, cloned animals, which they clone animals all the time now, which comes from a broken egg, right? Just like in the three-parent embryo would be from a broken egg, because you've taken the egg, you've opened it up, and you've changed it. A lot of animals have terrible birth defects. They die during gestation. A lot of the animals that are born, cloned animals, are not healthy. And it struck me, well, you know, there's a real safety concern here. You are making a human life with a broken egg. This could be considered, in my view, human experimentation. We don't know the consequences of that. The animal studies, there have been some animal studies done, but it seems to me there should be extensive primate studies done before you even try that. So one, it was a safety issue. Second, it was an ethical issue. Do we really want to make children to order? That's kind of what this is. And third, I raised the issue, you know, if you really want to have win-win parenting, there are so many, it's heartbreaking not to have a child and not to be able to have a child, either because you're infertile or because you're afraid that the child will be born unhealthy. But it's also heartbreaking to be a child without a home. What about all the children desperate to be adopted out there? And that is what, you could disagree with my perspective, but that's what raised the anti-science diatribe against me, which was fine. But it made me think of how often that is used to shut people up who are making appropriate ethical arguments in the public square, because you don't want to have to actually win the debate. You want to be able to bludgeon them into silence.
Wesley Smith is our guest. We're talking about playing the anti-science card on this Friday afternoon, August the 9th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We'll be right back.
Those beautiful notes were just the beginning of We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God, Concordia Publishing House's debut CD collection from Pastor Stephen Starkey, one of the most significant Lutheran hymn writers of our time. For a limited time, save 10% when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music, brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We're giving away two audio DVDs of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. That's almost 8 hours of teaching. Here's how you can win. Find the Issues Etc. podcast at the iTunes Store. Click Ratings and Reviews and write a review. Then send the text of your review to contest@issuesetc.org. The two listeners with the best reviews will receive the audio DVD of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. We'll announce the winners on Labor Day.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers, showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkham. We're talking about playing the anti-science card. Wesley Smith, Senior Fellow at the Discovery Institute Center for Human Exceptionalism, is our guest. So you described the way that the anti-science card is played, the circumstances under which it's played, and really the goal here to stifle any kind of opposition and to avoid the need to make any kind of an ethical or perhaps even a scientific case. How effective do you think it usually is?
I think it's very effective, particularly in the media, because what you find is there's a real campaign afoot to try to convince the media, which I'm afraid doesn't actually need much convincing, to only cover one side of various debates. You certainly see that in the global warming issue, and you know that's not my issue, but I pay attention to it, and I see the arguments on both sides of that debate. I certainly don't think the concerns about global warming are a quote hoax, as some do. On the other hand, it's certainly not a fact, you know, that humans are causing global warmings that will result in catastrophe, as some have argued. And yet you find that there's been a concerted campaign to the media, which has, I think, largely succeeded, saying only cover the people who support global warming and don't cover the skeptics. Certainly my friends at the Discovery Institute with Intelligent Design, when you hear intelligent design discussed in the media, the opponents of intelligent design get to define what it is and then get to knock it down. And often my friends at the Discovery Institute aren't even asked about the question. And often the opponents of intelligent design misdefine it. And so you end up with a very skewed view of what the Discovery people are actually doing. I've seen it also in an ethical issue like assisted suicide, where it used to be, and I'm not being immodest here, but I think I've written more about the issue of assisted suicide from an opposition viewpoint in the last 20 years than perhaps any other American writer. I've written books on it. I've been in articles. I've been interviewed on about 5 or 6 years ago, all of a sudden, the media, whenever there was an assisted suicide story, the media stopped calling me. And what did I find? You'd often find that the assisted suicide stories would contain supporters of assisted suicide and then more radical supporters of assisted suicide. And I saw this first when there was a Jack Kevorkian story, and the two people arguing about Jack Kevorkian were the Hemlock Society types and then the Compassion and Choices who took over from the Hemlock Society types, and no opponents of assisted suicide quoted. And I have noticed a complete drop-off, which is, you know, okay, that's how it is, but the assisted suicide article issue only generally gets support coverage from the supporting point of view. Or if there's an opponent, as you were bringing up earlier, often the opponent has a clerical collar because they want to create the impression that opponents of assisted suicide are just trying to impose religion, when in fact some of the most effective opponents of assisted suicide are the disability rights activists, who are very secular in their approach and generally in their outlook, who are very liberal in terms of their politics, and who tend not to be pro-life when it comes to abortion. But that doesn't get mentioned because the media are being sold that there's only one legitimate side to these issues. I think you could go across a broad array of issues, as I've just discussed, and see that phenomenon taking place. So I think that the campaign to brand opponents of embryonic stem cell research, for example, as anti-science, meant that you did not get a full view of what the opponents of embryonic stem cell research were saying. or it gets redefined. I think I was on your show when cloning happened, right? When they did the first human clones. And a lot of your audience may not be aware that we've now cloned human life to the 14-day embryo or 10-day embryo stage. Why didn't it get coverage? Well, because the scientists said it wasn't cloning. The scientists said all we did was take an unfertilized egg and get stem cells. Yet 5 years previously, when Wang Woo-suk from South Korea said he had done the very same thing that was actually done now, he was a fraud, but he said he had done what was done now, that made worldwide headlines. Why didn't it this time? Because the scientists wanted to create not create that kind of firestorm, and the media went willingly along. Yet if you looked at what the scientists were saying to each other in the science literature, they had done human cloning. They had created human embryos through cloning. What you saw in the popular media was, oh, this was just unfertilized eggs. So I think the media is a very willing accomplice in this one-sided approach to reporting on these very important moral, ethical, and scientific issues.
I mean, does it come down to something as simple as if someone proposes to do essentially human experimentation or destructive human experimentation, as in the case of embryonic stem cell research, and then says, we cannot have an ethical argument about this. Not unless that ethical argument supports our position. Are they effectively saying this kind of research should go without ethical check or debate?
Essentially, that's right. What they're saying is the ethics of this research we should be able to decide as we do the research. So that would mean there'd be no societal check and balance. And some actually say there's a constitutional right to conduct experiments, scientific experiments, which means the only way it could ever be regulated would be if the government showed a compelling state interest. For example, if a scientist was going to release a plague to see how many people died, I don't think anybody, even in the scientific community, would say, no, the government can't stop that. Although, you know, there was some bird flu experiments being conducted that were going to be published in the journals, how to make a bird flu through genetic engineering, and a lot of scientists are saying, don't you dare try to stifle our scientific literature on this, even though terrorists could have learned how to do that. So there is a view, at least among some in the science community, that whatever is ethical in science, only the scientists can determine. And that's, in a sense, almost an anti-American approach, because the genius of the United States is all-powerful institutions have checks and balances around them. And a check and balance over naked science is proper ethical parameters, which are, in a free society, democratically created.
You rightly say that either the anti-science card or the religionist card essentially come down to ad hominem ridicule, just basically...
Yes.
Ridiculing someone personally. But you also conclude that to prevent this kind of discourse, merely to protect the prevailing orthodoxy, ends up actually being genuinely anti-science.
Yes, it's very ironic, isn't it? Because the hallmark of the scientific method, I mean, if you're really saying you're anti-science, what you're really saying is you're against the scientific method. Because science is a method. It's not an ideology. It's not a moral system. It's a method. It's a method, very powerful and very effective method of learning about the universe and then applying it through technical means or whatever. So if you're anti-science, that means you're against the idea of experiments. You're against the idea of analysis. And, of course, that makes no sense. But what they're really trying to do is prevent the kind of open questioning and skepticism that is the hallmark of science, that everything is always up for debate, everything is always up for revision, everything as new data comes in, everything is always up for conversation. And to try to stifle that process, which is what the anti-science epithet does, is ironically itself anti-science, because that interferes with the method, whereas the others who are being called anti-science are either expressing an ethical view that is not appreciated, or propounding heterodox scientific theories that those who believe in the orthodox view don't want to challenge their views. And so the real anti-science are the people who hurl the anti-science charge.
Wesley Smith is an attorney and bioethicist, a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America. He's a columnist for First Things and National Review Online. You'll find a link to his columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Wesley, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks. And if ever anybody wants to follow me on Twitter, it's @ForcedExit.
Ah, excellent. @ForcedExit. When we come back, Dr. Robert Benet joins us. This is the 25th anniversary of the formation of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, essentially a merger of various Lutheran bodies into what was and still remains the largest Lutheran church body in the United States, although it has experienced in those 25 years the most constant decline, both in numbers of members and of congregations, and the decline is only steepening. We'll find out why after this.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
In Hosea 4, we read, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." At the CLCC, we educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Christians would if they learned what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website at theclcc.org. See what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us and encourage your pastors to hold an event in your area. For more information, go to theclcc.org.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri; Calvary Lutheran, Elgin, Illinois; Advent Lutheran, Zionsville, Indiana; Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Worth, Texas; Holy Cross Lutheran, Albany, Oregon; St. John's Lutheran, Evanston, Indiana; Mount Calvary Lutheran, San Antonio, Texas; Good Shepherd Lutheran, Boise, Idaho; Village Lutheran, Ladue, Missouri; Emmanuel Lutheran, Osceola, Iowa; St. Paul Lutheran, Clarinda, Iowa; Trinity Lutheran, Lebanon, Missouri; Mount Calvary Lutheran, Excelsior Springs, Missouri; the Lutheran Church of Our Savior, Cupertino, California; Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Freeburg, Illinois; and Peace Lutheran, Neenah, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen on Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week, issuesetc.org, and click Listen on Demand.